You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey everybody, Ed Stetzer here. Again, another episode of the New Churches Podcast. And today we're going to talk about embedding yourself into the fabric of your city. One of the funniest things that I wrote a book, I've been three different versions of it, but it was called originally Planting New Churches in a Postmodern Age and then Planting Missional Churches. And in the first version of the book, I mentioned that to embed myself in the city of Erie, Pennsylvania, I wanted to learn everything I could. So, you know, about Erie supposedly has the second most beautiful sunset in the world. Everyone says that in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's not a real stat. Who judges the sunsets? But one of the things is that Erie was the eighth most cloudiest city in the country. Okay. And then Erie has more bowling alleys per capita than any other city. Now, again, these were things that the Chamber of Commerce told. And so for me and people, so when I wrote this book, it's funny to me. It wasn't in the second edition or the third edition. But people come up to me all the time and say, oh, you're the guy who got into bowling because you lived in Erie, Pennsylvania. And that gets a factual, true statement. Somewhere I wrote it. Maybe it wasn't even in the book, but I know I wrote it somewhere. And so this is a very common thing. But the point is that's a simple way that I said, I'm going to be part of this community. Before that, we were in Buffalo planting a church and became Bills fans. And so we wanted to talk to some folks who have really been embedding themselves into the fabric of their community about some of the practices that they've done so that you can learn from them. Jeff Belcher has been involved in ministering since 1997, traveled with a worship band, was a student minister, worship pastor with a local church, and now he's a church planter, and he's the lead pastor of the Church of the Harbor, which can I just say that's a cool name of a church. They live in Baltimore. Jeff and his wife, Kelly, live in Baltimore with their family. Amanda Hudson has been a part of a church planting team for 7 years. She and her husband, Thomas, live in Washington, D.C., and they're serving together at Pillar Church, actually a network of churches too, but Pillar Church. And so we're excited to have both of them on the conversation here. Jeff, we're going to go to you first. Tell us about Church at the Harbor and the ways you've attempted to embed yourself into the fabric of that community.
Yes, sir. So God was kind to send my family and me to Baltimore with a team. So there were three families that moved up here together. And from the very beginning, we knew that we were serving in a marginalized community, lots of people with deep struggles. So we assigned one of our team members to just connecting with schools. Where we are currently, we have 13 schools within a mile and a half of our church. And we reach out to each of those schools at least once per month in a really practical way. Another one of our team members was responsible to connecting with fire and police and other city officials. So one way that we learned about the values was just through day in and day out, week in and week out conversations with the leaders in our communities, schools, fire, police. We asked them, as opposed to like going door to door and asking people what our church can do to serve the community in a meaningful way. We went directly to the leaders and we just found lots of practical information. We've been in Baltimore for 7 years now, and that's a practice that we still carry out consistently. And it's just yielded tons of fruitful information and opportunities for us.
Love it. I cannot keep a job that long, so I'm impressed that you did. And particularly a church planting role. I haven't been able to stay, you know, planted churches different places, haven't been able to stay longer than 4 years. And yet, those are some of the breakthroughs begin to come relationally and more. Amanda, you and Thomas, you came to DC to plant a church. How did you go about discovering the community, the values, and more of the place where you live? Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we live in Washington, D.C., so I don't know if the values that that they have here are necessarily my values, right? But it is a very diverse city where people like to talk and have conversations. There are more nannies at the the park than there are moms. So, you know, me going to the park and wanting to share the gospel, you know, my first few months here, I was talking to nannies from Nigeria. And so a Nigerian was coming to our service, and that was great. But reaching these moms and families that made six or more figures was intimidating, to say the least. And so involved was just a matter of being outside on a Saturday where they were finally with their kids, and walking around the neighborhood, getting a dog. Believe it or not, people introduce you more to their dog than they will to you. So we have met more people just because of our dog. Thankfully, my daughter loves pets. So she minds the dog while we have conversations. And being in the city, being kind of like a tourist in the city. So we talk to anyone from someone who's here for an internship to someone who's for 12 years, to someone who's here just for the summer, someone who's, I mean, just a wide array of literally a melting pot of people. But big thing is that we bought a house in one of the most expensive cities in the nation, and made that jump. And that has even made us more embedded, because when you say you're from here and you live here, you become a part of the culture because you know what areas people kind of congregate in. Are they in Southeast, Northeast, anywhere? And you know that, well, I don't really go over there, so I'm not going to talk to you all that much, right? So I love Washington, D.C. I think you either love it or you hate it, to be honest.
But, if you don't mind, I have a question for you. So given your experience in church planting, what signs or clues do you specifically look for when you begin to plant in a city regarding that place's values?
Yeah. And, you know, the challenges is that, you know, the cities are complex, and you kind of walk in, and I get that, you know, if you're, I live in a town that's over a century old in Wheaton, a railroad town. It's got unique history. You know, if you go to, I don't know, I was just down in Orlando, Florida, suburban Orlando, Oviedo, doing a meeting. And, you know, there's a certain sense that the community is the same thing. It's the same houses, and they're in subdivisions, and they're in, and then they got the, you know, the corner place where the Target is, and the Bed Bath and Beyond, whatever. But most places, like where you're in DC, where you are in Maryland, in Baltimore, or where I was in Buffalo, I mean, they have a history. So I think some key things are to ask, what's the history? And so I want to become an expert on the city where I live. So I know, you know, Buffalo and how the closing of Lackawanna Steel changed everything in Buffalo, and 70,000 jobs, and then multiple, you know, reverberations of that. I know how Buffalo, New York, when the recession of the 70s didn't really come back. And I know what that looks like. I know how the neighborhoods have shifted. I've walked the streets of the neighborhoods. I walked the street where that tragic mass shooting was. So part of it is know the history, talk to, and once you know history, talk to people who are influencers. You mentioned that in the beginning, Jeff, you got to know some key leaders. So when I was at one church, I got to know the local radio talk show host who just seemed to know everything. I said, he wasn't a Christian. He was kind of anti-Christian. I said, hey, would you go to lunch with me? I just want to learn, and asked him some questions, super helpful. So know the history, talk to the leaders, right? So I think that's key to get to people. And then part of that too is just, and I think we've already heard some of that with Amanda just talking about, is that be with people. Church planting is not a stage job. It's not talk to people or talk at people, but it's talk with people. And so as Amanda talked to even about her engaging in some of those contexts. And so I love the fact that, you know, community leaders, nonprofit leaders, they often will talk to and give you guidance and direction. Jeff, I know you've led your church to be very involved in the social problems of your city. And,
yes, sir.
And, you know, Baltimore's a city of challenges. Like I live in Chicagoland, and Chicago is a city of challenges. What have you learned about interacting with community and nonprofit leaders?
Sure. Well, our church, we pretty soon after getting started, developed a reputation for serving the community. We've found that there's just something when serving, particularly among marginalized people, to familiarity. We are devoted to building familiarity, rapport, and trust in our community. And what we found is among people with deep struggles, trust isn't something that's earned very easily. So what we have done is kind of like a first step to serving practical social justice needs, things like that, is just to be present everywhere. And one of the ways that we do that is we bring in a lot of mission teams, even 7 years in, because of the nature of our church. We bring up to, I think 23 is the most that we've ever had. The year that we brought in 23 mission teams, we knocked on 92,000 doors that year. Our staff is just committed to being present. So what we found is there are lots of institutions around that serve just practical needs of the people in our neighborhoods. But our church, we're just one of many. So we want to stand out different and kind of earn trust, be more than an institution where people come just to get food or clothes or things like that, but just to be present in people's lives. So that's the reason that we go to schools and school leaders and community leaders just day after day after day, because we think there's just something to that being continually present that fosters trust, that helps our people in our community to see us as more than just a handout, but sees us as people who care about them.
And you and your family actually, you know, moved into the context. I think that's really, it's important. I don't think we can plant churches via remote control and via distance. And so, you know, even, and your neighborhood, like the neighborhood we moved into in Buffalo is probably not the most desirable neighborhoods on Zillow. So we moved in. I was just preaching Sunday and I talked about the fact we moved into this, how we bought a house with two apartments in it for $70,000. And this was in the 90s. And, I put about $17,000 into it. I used to be a contractor, and that's just like the receipts I had from Home Depot. And then there was a drive-by shooting two doors down, and we sold the house 5 years later when we left for $40,000. So I tell people, do not have me invest your money, because I went from $87,000 value to $40,000 value. But that was, I mean, we needed to be among the people God called us to. So talk to us a little bit about that, because that's a key part of becoming part of the fabric, and tell your story a little bit too.
So a little bit about my story. I grew up in suburban Birmingham, Alabama, but I was kind of wired for adventure. You mentioned earlier in my bio that I traveled in a worship band. So a lot of people talk about culture shock with my family's coming to Baltimore, but we didn't necessarily experience a whole lot of that. We had 5 acres on the river in Alabama, and then we moved into an 800 square foot row home because of what you just mentioned. We wanted to live among our neighbors. And what we found in Baltimore is, whereas a lot of places throughout America, people live private, autonomous lives where we pull into our garages and don't even interact with our neighbors, that's impossible in Baltimore, just the nature of 12 foot wide row homes. So there was obviously an adjustment, just our moving into a context where there's a lot of brokenness manifest through addiction issues and crime and things like that. But yeah, you're right. Our living among our neighbors was incredibly valuable. For the first 3.5 years that we were in Baltimore, we had trouble finding a public location to meet. So we were doing up to 7 house churches. And in my 800 square foot row home, we were averaging about 60 people a week because of our being right there in the middle of a pedestrian context where people just walked to our house.
Yeah. People don't know what row homes in the rest of the country is. Please explain what a row home is.
Yeah. So essentially there are 2 floors above grade, and there's a living room in the front, a dining area that's part of the living space, and then a kitchen in the back, and then 2 bedrooms and 1 bathroom upstairs. So it's an 800 square foot house that's connected to about 40 others on each side of the block.
And how large is your family? How many kids?
Yeah, we're a family of 8, 6 kids.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tight squeeze.
Indeed.
I would say. row houses, the kind of row houses my family, my grandparents would have grown up in row houses, and families that big squeezed into row houses. But, back in the day, Amanda, you mentioned that you had, bought a house, and that was a significant marker to people. Now, those who don't, Baltimore is not DC. DC is not Baltimore. Mm-hmm. DC is just super transient. It's run by 22-year-olds. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain people kind of outside of that. Mm-hmm. You stepped in and put down roots. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this, the decision missiologically that you guys made to put down roots in that way.
For what I'm thinking, we were in a spot where our landlord was moving back in. And we were fortunate enough to kind of experience this whole displacement of DC growing. And what was it like to make a decision at that point when we were hearing from some close wise people, like, this is the time you need to get out. If this is kind of like a sign, you need to dip at this point. Looks like you're not going to be able to afford anything there. And we decided to go through a grant that were being offered for new time home buyers and take advantage of what people were taking advantage of building DC. And we decided to stick it out and buy a home. And we came across the river, which is the affordable place for a one room schoolhouse. And I mean, a family like us with a one income family. And we were actually able to get a yard. And I think it was the best decision that we had ever made to stick around. And we're seeing gentrification happen in our area, but it's about 10 more years ahead of us, I think. Mm-hmm. But our home that we were in is $1 million home now, and it's happening so quickly around us. It's growing so fast. So
so how do people perceive you differently?
Yeah.
Because tell me about that.
Okay, well, so people come in, especially since ministers a lot to the military. We have people who come in, and when we're here, I, like you were saying, I know this place. I know where, how fast you can get somewhere if you're in traffic. I know the road to go to avoid the interstate. And that has just been, I mean, it's only been 7 years. It doesn't take long, but it's been an opportunity to say, hey, listen, let's talk for a second, because here's where you want to buy. Here's where you want to rent. Or military family, if you can't get into that base. I have loved knowing the ins and outs of DC to give people a peace of mind, because it's so scary to move to a place, especially if you've been in a suburbia place and now you've got, you know, you don't have a Walmart anymore. You've got an Aldi or a Whole Foods. It's been really wonderful to give people a peace of mind and have lived here, have this amount of time to where I know this city well, not necessarily what you were talking about earlier with, you know, the council people and getting to know your city. I really honestly don't care about that kind of stuff.
Good. Tell me more.
I really don't care about my family from California calls and says, are you okay? What's going on? Tell me. There's a lot going on in this city, but in our little section, DC, there's so much going on as well. And people are coming in and out so fast that to help someone who comes into the city and know the important things of just daily living, like where you can feel safe going to the grocery store at night, or where to take your kids to the park that doesn't have maybe some unsafe materials on the ground, or just... That has been a gift, and that has been because we've said we're sticking around. That is really it. Just having the know, because there's no way that you're going to, that you can look up on a website, like what you're saying, and get to know like those little, you can get to know the big details, like what you're saying, I guess. And you know, what tourists go and see, but you're not going to know the little details.
Like, well, honestly, you're micro neighboring. I mean, you're not talking to the mayor. You're talking to your neighbor at the end of the street.
Oh yeah. And I mean, we, even though the north, like Georgetown, is less than 4 miles away from us, we never go over there. People from this area never go over there. And we would not recommend that they go to Pillar. We would recommend that they go over, you know, in their area so they can be in community.
Pillar being the church that they're
Pillar
they're
being the church that we're a part of, correct.
Right.
And of course,
I should mention too that Pillar is part of a network focusing on military families. And so that's why you mentioned a couple of times military families.
That's right.
I think your commitment to stay is worth noting too. You know, you and your husband, you started off as full-time vocational, and things got
for a split
challenges
second.
In church
That's
planning.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so yet you continue. He's stepped back into another vocation while continuing to lead. Talk to me a little bit about the decision process there.
For him stepping back into engineering.
Well,
funding ended. Yep. Some important funding ended. And so we had to go back to this degree that we thought was pointless, right? But ended up being a huge blessing and ended up continuing to allow us to be a one income family, which was incredible in this city. And I'm really cautious in this city when I say that we're a one income family because it's a huge blessing. Yeah. And it's rare. And yeah. So making the most of my time as the one that's not the income maker. Right. But him going back in, just honestly, it opened up a whole new world for us because then we got to see the working world with engineering. And but due to the fact that we lost funding, we had to think outside the box.
But you didn't leave. And that's, because I used to run a program and we would fund church planners for 2 years. If they didn't get self-sufficiency, they would quit. Why didn't you leave?
I mean, when people ask us that question, Thomas and I said over and over again, like, I'm just not feeling it. And yeah. I know that sounds really simple, but
The Lord's leading me. I love it.
Really? Our parents, you know, our family back in Georgia would be like, there's a church down the street. Come, you know, you can come. And we were just like, I don't know. It's just something saying stay. And honestly, we could have stayed and just, you know, partnered with another, you know, church in the area. We could have done that. Thomas, you know, maybe slowly being a lay pastor, and then who knows, that could have been a real possibility. But in the oddest of circumstances, we bought a house. And even in the transitional period, we lived in three other places around the city, hauling all of our stuff around in these two vans, which was absolutely absurd. But I look back on that situation, and it was so fun. Yeah. It was really fun.
No, yeah. That's great. That's great. I love your commitment to the journey and thankful for your commitment to the mission there. So let's kind of talk some closing thoughts here. Jeff, when you think about, you made this commitment to move your family in, you're living, in my world, we'd say living incarnationally, ministering incarnationally, and more. Help church planners, I'll give you the last word, help church planners to see the value of that, of actually embedding yourself. Why does it matter? Why does it matter biblically, missiologically, just personally as you engage it? Just talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if we're talking about from a purely biblical perspective, all people are created in God's image to reflect the nature, the goodness, the character, the essence of God to the people around them. And if we're not living that out before the people that we're serving, then we're robbing others of the opportunity to see God in us. So I think when we talk specifically about church planting, it's more, as you said, than just being on the stage preaching messages. It's about the way that we live day in and day out that reflects the love and the kindness, and specifically as it relates to our context and all church planters for that matter, the sacrificial nature of Jesus. People talk with Kelly and me all the time about just their gratitude for the sacrifices that we've made. And we don't like to think of it in terms of sacrifice. Kind of an illustration that I use with our church partners is if we go to McDonald's, that's probably not the greatest illustration, but it's we're going to put down $5 and get a combo that's not worth very much, but we do it because we think that it's worth the cost. For us, planting and the quote-unquote sacrifices associated with that, it's just a nature, a matter of economy. We think that whatever we've paid in terms of a price is worth what God's going to do through us. So the incarnational nature is we give our lives, we pay that price, as it were, because we think the people around us are worth that because Jesus did that for us.
Good. We've been listening to two folks who've actually modeled this, who've actually, moved in and become good news. Share the love of Jesus in the neighborhood. So thanks to Jeff Belcher and Amanda Hudson for joining us. As always, let me encourage you that all the resources at newchurches.com are there for free for you, for church planters, for your church planting team. Go there, check it out. And as always, if you don't mind, the New Churches podcast is Partnership with the Send Network has just grown our reach, which is great. Most listened to church planning podcasts that we know of in the world. But still a lot of church planners, I think, would be helped by this. We're coming up on 700 episodes, lots of good resources. So I encourage you to leave a review so people can find us. And thanks for listening to the New Churches Podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.